This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
I like being live.
In 2021, welcome.
It is good to see you, Zubin.
Good to see you as well, Gary.
Hello, everybody in the chat. Good to see Hannah Lee, Hannah LC. Good to see Entrepreneur Ed, SL Snake Law, Kit Red, Kay Nixon, Barry Eisenbaum, Jay Monet. They're in the building, Zubin.
They're in the building. So is the unboxing beginner.
What's cooking?
A whole lot. Really excited to be back with Coffee and Commerce with Gary. What we're going to do today, we've got a number of people we're going to have live with us shortly. But before we go live with them, a couple of recent trends that I want to get Gary's input on and thoughts. One that he's been predicting for quite a bit of time that I think, like many other things that he predicts, is actually coming to fruition now. So I'm excited to hear what he has to say on that. But let's start with the first one. So e-commerce has evolved a tremendous amount over the last 9 months. It's almost like when the internet was a fad and people were like, oh, the internet, maybe this thing will kick on. Same thing with e-commerce. And now it's real and now it's just exploding. So with that, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, baby boomers. So consumer 65 and older are now the fastest growing group of online buyers, spending 49% more on the web in 2020 than they did before. What's more, the frequency of their purchases have jumped 40%. And on average, they spent $1,600 from January through October. What say you about this new segment, Gary V?
The internet is undefeated. And much like what you saw on Wall Street this week and everything else that's going on, how did anybody not think at a mature state that the consumer that has the most money and the most rationale for convenience would not be the ones that would have their day? I remember when we transitioned from beepers to Blackberries and from Blackberries to this, and every time I said, you're gonna go from that beeper to Blackberry, and everybody 50 years old said no, and then they did. And then when this came out, I bought it the day it came out, and I said, you're gonna all go to this. And they said, no, I don't feel the buttons, I can't type. I'm like, you don't understand what a platform is. And that all happened. The reason I'm right a lot, Zubin, is A, I don't make a lot of predictions to begin with. And I only do them when I'm 100% sure, because I'm not interested in somebody making a clip where I'm completely wrong. Like, you know, like who wants to be wrong?
Yeah.
So I am, you know, what do I say? I say that it is inevitable. Steve, great call. I love the things here. By the way, so somebody said, what is this? Team, this is Coffee and Commerce. Zubin here is my partner. I bought his business. He's running something called Vayner Commerce, VaynerCommerce.com. If you have commerce needs, we go on the internet occasionally. We shoot the shit. We have guests. We have some today. We just talk about the e-commerce space because we love it. I've been in it forever. He's been in it forever. Right now we're talking about the growth of the mature stat. And to me, that's exciting because they also live on Facebook, which is the best ad product for CAC and LTV, if you know what you're doing with creative and media together. Mm-hmm. And so it makes all the sense in the world, and it's a credible, incredible business opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the other thing that brings to mind when we're talking about this segment is that there are a lot of companies whose products would be great for this segment, but they just haven't targeted them because they think that, oh, these people aren't online buying. But they absolutely are. And I think that it's further indication of exactly what you're talking about right now, to have creative landing pages, retention, everything really personalized per segment. And I think that's huge, right, for that audience. Next thing, you've been talking about this for some time. I think maybe the first video I saw of you, you talked about voice commerce and you talked about Amazon and all this other stuff, Echo. Here's what's fucking crazy. OCC Strategy indicated recently that 3 years ago, the amount of e-commerce occurring over smart speakers, such as those like the Google Home and the Amazon Alexa, totaled $2 billion 3 years ago in the US. Over the next 12 months, that figure is going to hit $40 billion in online sales through voice.
You know, I don't get excited about reports because I think reports can do anything they want, but it's going to happen because humans don't like friction. And hey, Alexa, send me sushi versus me going to my Seamless is a lot faster. The end. Thus, it will happen.
And with it happening, like when we're talking about brands, right? What's one or two things you think the brand should be taking into consideration as it relates to this? Like, what can they do to make sure that their products
Jason Hirschhorn is in here, one of my favorite personalities of internet culture ever. What an incredible curator. If you don't know who this man is, Google him. I'm a big fan of some of the things he's done through the years on email and links and blogging, and real OG guy, good thinker. What'd you say?
So with voice, for brands to leverage voice.
I think sonic branding is a must. How am I still like one of the only people that every time I have a video on Instagram, it's got my brand, right? Gary V right now. Ooh, Sean Gorelick, my cousin. Big shout out. It's good to have some fam in here. He's got a guitar thing going. Sean, put your guitar URL in here. I'll have Dustin pin it. Anybody who's in guitar culture, especially if you're in New York, big shout out to the Doge community. They're spamming the shit out of this. Sonic branding for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping into things like Clubhouse for sure. I think Clubhouse is going to be a platform and a feature like Stories was for Snapchat, right? I think that you've got Twitter testing it right now, and I predict that Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, definitely those will all have Clubhouse features on their product. Got it? And so I think that is a strategy. I think putting humans to the fore, brands need more humans.
100%.
And so we have that advantage, right? As VaynerCommerce and VaynerMedia, you've felt the effects of it. You're like, fuck, this is a business, new business engine that I've never understood. You're seeing that manifest. You know, I think every company needs that. It's not like the CEO and founder has to be in the front, but humans. So if you're Budweiser, your brewmaster, if she or he is charismatic and interesting, needs to be in Clubhouse doing beer training, right? So that's another audio thing. I think advertising on podcasts with live reads from the hosts that are contextual to the platform, you know, let's just keep using Budweiser, a client of ours, health and wellness blog. You would think not really. I say, why not? Hey guys, it's Rich Roll. I know we talk about health and wellness here, but hey, let's call a spade. Once in a blue moon, you could step out and have a Budweiser. Like, you know, that, like, you could always contextualize your creative. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about. As far as building skills on top of Alexa or waiting, I think that if you've got an innovation budget to learn, you drop a couple hundo and you make one so you can taste it. And that's what I'm great at. You know that, Zubin. I don't fight just for the P&L. I fight for innovation because we learn and we move forward. And so that's what's up.
Brilliant. Let's take our first guest.
Thank you. Hold on. Adam Ziga just said, Gary, my man, not looking so hot. I think I look good. I'm really sad by that diss. Jay, what's good, bro?
What's up? Hey, appreciate you having me on. This is actually my second time. So shout out to Zubin.
Let's go. Zubin, again. Good shit.
But I really have a two-part question, so I want to go quick just to get it in. So the first part is, it kind of bounces off what you were just talking about, innovation. How do you balance innovating versus taking ideas from like other companies and businesses and kind of molding it into your own? Like, where do you find the balance between that, especially if you're just growing?
Zubin?
So I think that—
And maybe, Zubin, the way you thought about it as an independent entrepreneur—
Sure.
And then maybe from the lens of now seeing my leadership, by the way, it might be exactly the same. I actually have no idea. I'm actually
that's a good
genuinely
point.
Curious, but I think it's a way that you can bring some value here.
That's a brilliant way of looking at it. Okay. So when I was on my own, right, what I was thinking of is innovation, right? Because you're doing something, you want to do something different. And you're like, I've got to do something different in order to make money. I've got to do something different for my company to be of value, et cetera. Once you actually get to the point where someone's putting value on your business, you end up learning more in that period of time, in that 6 months, at least I did, than the entire 15 to 20 years of doing it on my own before. Because at that point, it's valuable for me versus somebody else. And when someone else comes in and goes, okay, what about your business fundamentals? Where's this? Where's that? Where's your concentration of clients? You have too many clients. Too few clients make up too much of your revenue. All those business fundamentals that actually bring value to someone else, when you don't pay attention to those things because they're not sexy, when you're doing it on your own, you realize after the fact that they are. So from my perspective, where pre-VaynerCommerce, post-VaynerCommerce, before it was like innovation, frankly, for the sake of innovation, for doing something new, doing something unique, because I thought it was necessary for me to do it and it was exciting. But then you come back and you realize after the fact that, and now it's like, let's get the fundamentals in place. Let's get what we need to actually have a thriving, sustainable business, and then innovate on top, and not just innovate for the sake of innovation. Do some innovation, exactly what Gary was talking about with Alexa Skills, right? Don't just do it because you want to do it and put a ton of money. Put a limited budget about on it. And then for innovation specifically, put certain budgets on innovation that you're not expecting a return on.
Jay, what people don't know about me is I'm practical as fuck with 85% of my shit, and I'm pure fucking crazy offense with 15% of it, and I have good intuition around that 15%, and that's why I've gotten serious.
Got you. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Because if you're gonna risk your way out of business, bro.
Yeah, for sure. And so the second part I wanted to follow up with, right now I work for a thrift shopping company, and it'll be thriftshopping.com. And the boss has actually given me an opportunity to do the marketing for him. And he's like really into the innovation. Like he's like, everything's a go, just make sure I run it by him type of guy. Mm-hmm. And so what can I do? And my time's limited within that for the moment, but I have a chance to prove myself. So
what does success look like is the first question you got to ask yourself.
Yeah. And so I want to know, what can I do? Like, what should be my top maybe two or three priorities, since my time is so limited with it?
You didn't answer the question.
Wait, what's up?
What's success look like to this guy who's deciding your fate?
He wants to see, like, he wants to for sure get a return on the money, but then he also wants to expand the brand and just get more awareness, because I did actually get
You got to ask him with 100, what's this person's name?
Patrick.
So Patrick, I got $1. How much do you want me to spend on marketing to show you that you got sales, and how much do you want me to spend to build up the brand that leads to bigger sales later? He might come back and say 80-20, 50-50, 0, you know, 100. I don't give a shit, but the fact that you don't know that makes you vulnerable. Got it?
Yeah, because so that's I thought the same way, yeah.
Got it? So you go right at it. Pat!
Okay.
I need this for you. After that, you got to look self-awareness. You know, what Zubin will tell you behind my back is Gary crushes sales and brand. So you might not. And it took, you know, like everyone's different. So do you know how to sell shit on the internet? Like, do you know how to take $800 and run Facebook and Instagram ads for a thrift shop to have people come in? But you may not. And it's okay if you don't.
Yeah.
This is about self-awareness. So that after you know how Pat wants you to spend money, the brand part is subjective, so you need comments, engagement, virality. You can massage that shit.
Yeah.
The sales part.
The sales,
not,
I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
And what I know is a lot of Gary B understudies, they can't sell shit for shit.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They forget that I blew up every business I was in with sales. They're like, they just want to be like, yo, best practice of parroting the shit they hear from me for free, and they think they're a fucking expert. They ain't shit.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you got to be self-aware, and that's okay. I'm not saying they ain't shit. That's me. I think you can tell my team. I'm joking.
Yeah,
don't put yourself in a trap. That's like me saying I know something about VR. I do, but I don't. So
exactly,
I'm not out here bravado.
I don't want to be in that situation.
So
exactly.
Don't, Pat, how do you want me to spend my money? Focus on what you can, and then be honest and real about it. You understand?
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
And then whatever you can't do, figure it out. And then there's, you know, tactics, and learn and try and test and be, and don't overpromise and, you know, underpromise, overdeliver. Be like, Pat, I'm not sure I can make the sales happen. And then boom, somebody came in and bought a weird sofa and you're like, yo, I'm a champion. You know, like you go that way.
Got you. Okay. I appreciate that. That helps a lot.
I'm happy to help.
Nice.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Sweet. Who we got next? Martin.
Hey, Zubin. Hey, Gary.
Martin, it's great to interact with you on social all the time. It's great to see you in real life.
Good to see you, man. Good to see you both. Yeah, I'll just give a quick bit of context and I'll set up the question. So I'm working at this kind of intersection of disability, social content, and entrepreneurship. The disability part is I'm a full-time wheelchair user, have like care assistants to help me with my daily living and I guess just general life experiences. I want to make the world more inclusive and more accessible. That's like the mission side, right? The social content is I started blogging in 2009. I've done podcasting, got a YouTube channel, done all the great brand stuff that you talk about a lot. And yeah, I've been voted one of Britain's most influential disabled people. So that's kind of the brand, the content, social media side. And then entrepreneurially, I co-founded a community magazine called Disability Horizons. There's a lately we've co-founded Purple Goat, which is basically like VaynerMedia, but connecting big brands with the disability market. For those that don't know, 1.3 billion people globally spending $8 trillion annually. It's a totally untapped market. And also I sold a travel business to Accommable with my, to Airbnb with my co-founder a couple of years ago. So coming to the question around commerce, the community magazine Disability Horizons, we got about a year ago into product and, you know, kind of feeling our way, a bit novice at it. And some of the PPE equipment because of the pandemic exploded and we did a lot of revenue, but we're trying to get way more strategic and tactical about the right products for the right part of the disability audience. So my question comes back to Facebook advertising. Facebook doesn't hold data on health or disability, but we want to get products for blind people that are useful. So get cool content with influencers, hit that segment, et cetera, et cetera. So I just wonder what you both think about how to overcome that issue around data.
Well, data doesn't exist in a lot of places, and content and common sense take over when you don't have the ability to go data. Everyone's going to have this problem with iOS 14, right? Or at least anybody who's trying to reach somebody on an iPhone, which is a hell of a lot of people. You know, I think that what you have to do is create ecosystems of creative and then distribute them in contextual places. We may go back, Marty, to a place where you're marketing inside Facebook message groups and you're paying, like you get to go to hand-to-hand combat, right? You go to blogs, you go to YouTube channels that are speaking to the community. You go to almost like television-like DNA where you're going there. And so, you know, I think it's, you can't change what doesn't exist. If you, you know, it's like the cannabis friends I have, right? They're like, Gary, and I'm in that industry, investor in a lot of things. We can't target, we can't even run ads. I'm like, yes. And I couldn't ship alcohol to 40 of the 50 states when I started winelibrary.com. You've got to live in the realities of it. Marty, you need to be, you know, to your point, you're not gonna be able to target the way somebody else is in a sector. That doesn't mean you can't go to Google right now and type in keywords and see what the four first pages worth of results go take you, and is there advertising options on there? Kind of like I did in 1997 on Yahoo or 2001 in Google. And I think that makes a lot of sense to you because you also came up in this game. That's just what happens, right? You also can search hashtags with it, and you're gonna know all the right hashtags because it's your industry, and you're gonna find influencers who could be spokespeople, can be amplifiers of, right? Because that's what's gonna happen. So it's a little less scale, a little more hand-to-hand combat, but I think you're gonna find some great things, and it's gonna make you more innovative than the people who are lazily just using 1P data across big platforms.
Cool, thank you.
Does that make sense, Marty?
It makes a lot of sense, very helpful, thank you.
You know, and it's sometimes a perspective swig, right? I think it's the opportunity because it's going to challenge you to be more creative. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people right now are losing because they're lazy because Facebook and Instagram are so easy, but it's actually their slow death because they don't realize they become one dimensional and those marketplaces change.
Yeah, how about kind of email lists and custom Facebook data?
Of course, there's always one, you know, there's always custom data you can buy that you can overlayer, you know, so there'll always be things like that as well.
Awesome, thank you.
What I think, Martin, the other thing to consider is what you have, which a lot of brands don't, is a ton of content because you started as a publication first. I mean, so many of the brands that we talk to now, especially ones that are selling commoditized products, drop shipping, et cetera, they need to now build that whole layer of lifestyle content, et cetera, make it meaningful. You've got that side of the business in place. So it's really about leaning into that and almost getting a significant portion of your audience to come in through that funnel and then drive them to the shop experience, because I think that they want to consume that type of content. So bring them in through there.
Yeah, agreed. Brilliant. Thank you both so much.
Nice to see you.
Take care.
Raj.
Hello, Zubin. Hi, Gary. How's it going for you?
Hi. Very well, Raj. Great to see you.
Okay, so I might be a bit nervous because hell, I'm half asleep. It's 3 a.m. here.
Wow, thank you for being here. Well, it's great to see you. Fire away, how can we help?
So I've been involved in dropshipping since last time, 6 months, and people are saying that dropshipping is dead. Is that true?
Like, no.
I've got a great fucking mentor. He's very supportive. He's very talented. But then people around here, they're saying that dropshipping is bad. You're too late for dropshipping. I mean,
no, they're wrong.
Okay. So you've got any tips?
Thanks for waking up at 3 a.m. for that.
Raj, by the way, I think it was worth it. If you get affirmation, Raj is in a young part of his career where he's actually listening to other people's opinions. So I'm going to make a bet and say that it's highly likely that the people's opinions he's listening to who are saying drop shipping is dead have not been as successful as me. I mean, there's trillions that are more successful than me, but I'm taking a guess here, have not had more successful business careers than me so far. And ironically, a very simple answer of no, it is not dead might be the affirmation he needs to shut that noise out and focus. Raj, the reason it's not dead is most things don't die. It's hard for things to die. Is social media, to break through on social media today is harder than it was on YouTube when I did it. It's harder to break out on Clubhouse today than it was even 7 months ago. There is always a supply and demand issue of things in society. You understand? So okay, yep. nine years ago, 14 years ago, shit, fucking 15 years ago, when I was hacking with some drop shipping, I could have told the people that think they're OG drop shippers to you that they've been doing it for 5 years and they said you're too late. I could make fun of them and say they were 10 years too late from when I did it. Timing on something that works is not the variable, it's your talent. See, what happens is when you're not as talented, but you're good at finding things early on, it doesn't take as much talent because you have so much more arbitrage. Later, as more people do something, it's harder, it requires more talent. So that's the difference. It's not dead, it is more challenging and it's more predicated on your skill set. Got it?
So,
there was a lot of people that looked like social media experts in 2007 on Twitter. A lot of them are gone now because it got harder. More people had opinions, more platforms popped up. But I wasn't scared in 2007 and I'm not scared in 2021 because 2031, I'm going to be the best in the game.
Raj, another quick take with dropshipping specifically. So I think one of the things that we've observed with dropshippers that do it really well, back to exactly what Gary was saying, it's about the effort you put into it and value. Like, what value are you driving for your consumer? If you're just going to list something and with basically the information that comes from a manufacturer and try to sell it, you can do that. But what level of success are you going to have? What kind of brand can you build versus actually adding in, contextual information, adding in lifestyle filtering. Like, let's say you're in some commoditized industry and people come and buy stuff. What additional value can you add? What additional information can you add beyond what the manufacturer provides you? Can you take your own photos, your own videos, add your own take on it so that when somebody comes to your site, you're helping them make that purchase decision for that commoditized product? It's stuff like that. So to Gary's point, it's about talent, putting effort out there and doing it. Is it dead? No. Do you have to put a lot more effort now than you did 5 years ago? Yes, but that's the case because consumers want more and people give them more. And so you've got to just make sure that you're doing more than what someone did 5 years ago and giving that consumer value.
Talent matters, Raj.
So I'm not so much experienced in dropshipping. I just learned it 6 months ago, I guess. My mentor is fucking awesome. I mean, he handles me pretty well. And I've been doing this baby store.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Raj. Even if you don't make a lot of money in it, you're learning skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've already won.
I see other 21-year-olds. They are just partying
Stop with that. The second you look at somebody else, you're already vulnerable. I don't know what you were about to say, good or bad, if you were going to shit on the 21-year-olds or talk about 21-year-olds that are flexing. The second you started that combo, it was over, not good. I see other 21-year-olds is the worst way for any 21-year-old to ever start a fucking sentence.
Okay, all right.
And by the way, for everybody watching, you can add 34, 39, 67. It's not good. It leads to nothing good. Good, I love you, Raj.
Thanks for joining us, Raj. Thank you so much. See you.
Let's sneak one more in before I bounce this next meeting.
Let's do it.
Let's go. That just put me in a great mood. Anybody who lives in Australia, this gentleman is gracious, wonderful, generous, and an incredible, incredible sports card personality. And it is so nice to see him. I'm in the best mood. Grayson, what's good, bro?
Thank you, Gary. That's really sweet. What's good? Well, I need some help.
Okay.
Basically, I've got, as you know, Click and Mortar Trading Card Store. I built the site like in 2009, I think, on Shopify. We've been rebuilding, and I want to know how you build a call to action that's as clean and simple as what you do with Empathy Wines, because it's remarkable.
Well, I was selling a single product. You're selling such a much more complicated situation.
But you had access. I mean, you could have got crates of wine, whole range of wine. You chose to narrow down onto a very specific
thing. I did, but I was more Panini in that scenario than I was you.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah, good point.
You have 100 fucking SKUs every second possible. If you want to get very narrow with wax, you can get clean. But as you start opening up your packs and selling individual cards, you just have too much image. You're more wine library, which is looks like it's from 1947, than you are empathy. So that's the difference. You're the retailer, not the supplier of a very narrow product. For everybody who's watching, Panini makes basketball and football cards, and both football, American and proper football. I bought some good cards from Grayson when I was down there in soccer, proper football. But, you know, I think, you know, it's funny. I know you got some good stuff. By the way, Grace, I think you know this. It's a fragmented market. For example, I think you posted an Instagram story yesterday about Vegas Dave's take. It's collapsing. But it's funny, and I think you know this about me. I actually think 80% of the market is vulnerable. I don't want people over-investing in high-population Panini-based rookie cards of kids who haven't proven that they're one of the 100 best players of all time. Like Grace, you know, like I'm not excited about John Collins's market cap being higher than Steve Nash's. I'm not excited about, Kobe White's market cap. Zubin, I'm talking about 8,000 units of a highly graded card at $200 a pop creates a market cap greater than Kevin Garnett's. So I actually think there is a huge bubble in one sector. Meanwhile, and I think, you know, it's fucking feels like it's happening in real time. I think 317 Michael Jordan's, that's an incredibly bad take by Vegas Dave, because he's saying there's too many of them. There's another part, it's called demand. You know, maybe on Mike Trout, because most people don't give a fuck about Mike Trout. Michael Jordan's demand is insane. In the super wealthy 40-year-old culture seeking audience. I'm a 45-year-old businessman wearing a fucking Biggie hoodie. This is not what 45-year-old businessmen with my wealth looked like 25 years ago, 40 years ago. They would buy paintings and fucking China cups at a Sotheby's auction. But now they're dropping, I mean, the Jordan is gonna be a million. It's gonna be a million. I really think so, Greg. I really think so.
Yeah. And you look into the NFL space, Trevor Lawrence is gonna push everything up, which is gonna make, Elway's more expensive.
Correct.
Allen.
Correct, because Trevor has the potential in the National Football League to be the Zion effect, because he's the best quarterback since Andrew Luck to come out of a draft. Pack breaking is gambling, so wax has got incredible growth. So it's an amazingly complex, interesting time in sports cards.
Just a quick thought for you. So tactically speaking around CTA, simplifying them, etc.,
I have to run. I'm gonna let Zubin give you some good value here. I want to thank my audience that tuned in. And I can't, Grace, National, August?
I can't get there, COVID.
Even in August? Why, because when you get back into Australia, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks and that's challenging?
At the moment, we're not allowed to fly there, as far as I'm aware. We'll see.
I know we'll it loosened up even more for you this, yeah, just the other, I was literally on the phone twice with Australia today.
It goes back and forward, but we'll definitely, we'll catch up for sure.
Cheers.
See ya.
Thanks.
So Grayson, what I was getting at from a CTA standpoint, so just to optimize that, because you're talking about a couple of things that you, like if we think about the question that you asked, there are several things here. One is price pack architecture online, right? For any brand. Should I sell one unit of my product in retail and it's $299. How can I make that work online, right? If I'm selling it in retail for $299. And then a lot of thought comes, do I sell them in cases? Do I sell them in bundles? Do I do X, Y, Z? It's important to test those online, right? In terms of your landing pages and understand what people are buying. So part of the answer to your question is intuition and gut of what does my consumer want? And then the other part of it is testing. So the biggest mistake that I think brands make is they run their media, their emails, everything in their homepage. In a case like Empathy, it works as a very basic experience and the homepage is essentially the product detail page. But for many brands, you got to actually drive them down further in the funnel. So they'll drive them to the homepage, which is a mistake because people get confused and lost, or they'll drive them to a product detail page, which is usually just like a commoditized template looking page that doesn't engage with the user. Highly recommend building landing pages. Use a basic tool, build these landing pages, test them out, and test landing pages that have different products on them, different experiences. Like we were talking to a client the other day, one kind of simple method to do that is you make one landing page template, and then you put it in, say, a Google Optimize for A/B split testing. And then you just have one product pod there, and that product pod has a product ID. Make four different versions of that product in Google Optimize, rotate that product ID, and now you've got four unique landing pages with price points, with CTAs, et cetera, that all run through Google Optimize, and you see the results. So from a consumer standpoint, they won't know. They'll always get that same version. And hit me up if anybody wants more details on that. But test. First, figure out what you're going to test, and then put it in and test it. But in terms of a CTA, I'm totally with you. The simpler, the better. The more straightforward you are with what you want the consumer to do, the better. Oftentimes, you get to these pages, and it's like too many options and too many things. There's too much going on, right? So what you want to do is you want to inform them. You want to help them make a decision. Maybe their decision is going to be to leave and go somewhere else and buy, but that's much better than them coming to your page and you spending a ton of money on these people continually to come in and just add to cart and bounce or not add to cart at all. So I think it's really important to kind of summarize it. Go with your gut intuition of like two or three different pack sizes, experiences, et cetera. Put them on your site, test them. Don't drive traffic to your homepage or product detail page unless you're doing super high level prospecting and your homepage is amazing and you want to drive people there. Drive them into an intent and an intent that a deliberate intention that you want them to take.
Thank you, Zubin. That's brilliant. I appreciate it. And I think that's going to go a long way to help us to upgrade, to level up our site. So thanks.
Amazing. Glad to help.
Have a good day, man.
You as well. So everyone, thank you so much for joining again. Really excited to be back with Coffee and Commerce in 2021. We've got a ton of guests lined up for pretty much the entire year. So you'll be seeing more of us. And as Dustin mentioned, if you want to join us for a future episode, make sure to tweet at me as well as Vayner Commerce and we'll get you on. Thank you and have a wonderful weekend.
That's the show. Hope you learned something. See ya. All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey podcast, Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Taught Me You Don't Have to Be a Tycoon by Johnny Pepa. Gary V has redefined for me what it means to be a business person. Used to think you had to be overwhelmingly win-lose to be hyper-successful. Gary V podcast has shown me heart, humility, and compassion can accompany awesome results. I hope he buys the Jets. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.